Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Mario Ritter Jr., Kelly Jean Kelly, and Jill Robbins. Later, you will hear part two of Hearts and Crosses by O. Henry in our series, American Stories. But first, here is John Russell.
An edited video of U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has raised questions about social media and political campaigns in the United States. The video was produced last week after President Donald Trump's State of the Union speech. The video shows Pelosi repeatedly tearing up a printed copy of the speech while the president spoke. Trump posted the edited video on Twitter. Pelosi did tear the pages of her copy of the speech, but she did so only after Trump finished speaking, not during the address, as the video shows. Pelosi's office asked Twitter and Facebook to take down the video. Both companies refused to do so. Researchers worry the video's selective editing could mislead people. Selective editing is a term for editing or changing videos in a way that does not show what really happened. Such recordings are sometimes called cheapfake videos. Researchers fear the number of cheapfakes could increase if social media companies do not identify or make rules about such videos.
The United States has a long history of political candidates showing their opponents in a negative light. Thomas Jefferson and John Adams attacked each other in newspaper advertisements over 200 years ago. In 1960, John F. Kennedy's campaign used an ad showing different images of Richard Nixon sweating and looking weak. In some ways, the edited video of House Speaker Pelosi is not unusual. What is different now, says Clifford Lamp, is how widely such videos can spread in such a short time. Lamp is a professor of information at the University of Michigan. The difference now is that the campaigns themselves, the president of the U.S. himself, is able to disseminate these pieces of media to the public, he said. Lamp added that political candidates no longer have to work with media outlets.
Facebook, Google, and Twitter have reported on their efforts to reduce disinformation on their services. The hope is to avoid some of the backlash created by social media misinformation during the U.S. elections 4 years ago. But the video of Pelosi does not violate existing policies, both Twitter and Facebook said. Facebook has rules that ban what are known as deepfake videos. Such videos use artificial intelligence, or AI, technology to make it seem like someone said words that they did not actually say. Researchers say the Pelosi video is a cheapfake video, a video that has been changed without the use of AI. Cheapfakes are much easier to create and are more common than deepfakes, notes Samuel Woolley. He is director of propaganda research at the Center for Media Engagement at the University of Texas.
The Pelosi video is deliberately designed to mislead and lie to the American people. Pelosi Deputy Chief of Staff Drew Hamill tweeted last week. He criticized Facebook and Twitter for not taking down the video from the social media services. Andy Stone, who works for Facebook, reacted to Hamill's comments on Twitter. Stone wrote, "Sorry, are you suggesting the president didn't make those remarks and the speaker didn't rip the speech?" Speaking with the Associated Press, Stone confirmed that the video did not violate the company's policy. In order to be taken down, the video would have had to have been created with newer, more advanced technology. It would have also possibly tried to show Pelosi saying words that she did not say. Twitter did not remove the video either. It pointed toward a blog post that says the company plans to start identifying tweets that contain synthetic and manipulated media. The new policy will take effect on March 5th.
U.S. law does not say much about cheap fakes. Social media companies generally police their own websites. A law, Section 230 of the Communication Decency Act, protects technology companies from most legal action related to the information posted on their sites. Most social media companies now ban violent videos and videos that could cause real-world harm. In recent years, Facebook, Twitter, and Google's YouTube have received criticism about offensive videos that have appeared on their sites. The companies sometimes remove the videos. Other times, they leave the videos on their sites, pointing to the right to freedom of expression. The future of misinformation through social media is unclear. Jennifer Griegel, an assistant professor at Syracuse University, called for laws to better govern social media in cases of political propaganda. However, this proposal has some weaknesses, she admits. One difficulty is that the very people who will be regulating them are the same ones using them to get elected. I'm John Russell.
What is being kept in a small space because of the new coronavirus like? Passengers on a vacation trip in the Western Pacific Ocean know very well. They are on the Diamond Princess, a huge cruise ship that is quarantined in the Japanese port of Yokohama. More than 200 passengers on the ship have been infected with the new coronavirus, COVID-19. Health officials have reacted by keeping about 3,500 passengers on the ship. They are waiting until existing cases can be treated and other passengers are cleared of the disease. The number of cases from the ship is the largest group of infections in the world outside of China. The Associated Press spoke with passengers and looked at their communications on social media.
Even during the quarantine, Cheryl and Paul Molesky appeared to still be on vacation. The two Americans from Syracuse, New York, can be seen in YouTube videos relaxing, often in bathrobes. They appear to be enjoying themselves, looking at the ocean and snow-covered Mount Fuji in the distance. We try to have an upbeat presentation. We're not hurt, we're not in pain, we're actually just enjoying ourselves, said the 78-year-old Paul Molesky. 59-year-old Cheryl Molesky spends several hours each day answering emails and texts and preparing their YouTube videos. She said they are concerned when a new group of cases is announced, but she added there was little they could do. We decided to make the most of every day.
One Japanese man in his 30s, who did not want to give his name, said he spends his days mostly taking pictures of each meal. He then posts them anonymously on Twitter. All I can do is to wait and tweet, he said. The ship has restaurants and many forms of entertainment, but they are mostly closed. Passengers now mostly must stay in their rooms. Less costly rooms on the ship are not much wider than a double bed. Pictures posted on the ship's website show that there is space only for a desk chair. The least costly rooms do not have windows. The larger rooms are about 20 square meters or less. People on the ship must clean their own rooms and clothes. Contact with the crew has been limited since the first 10 cases were confirmed in early February. For many, the days now center on food service. One crew member wearing a mask and gloves hands out the plates. Another provides other things needed for the meal, while another notes names and room numbers. The boat has added more movies and TV channels to try to help with the boredom. People without balconies are permitted to walk outside for about an hour each day. They must keep 2 meters apart, however, to avoid spreading the virus. Passengers talk and wave to each other from their balconies. For the Japanese man on the ship, the food is one of the biggest problems. I miss Japanese food, he said.
A recent video posted on Twitter shows a group of men wearing masks and what appears to be the clothing of kitchen workers. One man, identified as Binay Kumar Sarkar, says, "We are scared. We appeal to the Indian government and the United Nations to help us." Some of the crew members who got infected with the virus are restaurant, bar, or housekeeping workers. They most likely had contact with passengers until those services were closed. Until the quarantine started, everything was business as usual, and everyone was freely moving around, said Kazuho Taguchi. He is director of Global Health Cooperation at Japan's Health Ministry. Crew members still share rooms, as the number of cabins for them is limited, Taguchi said. But one crew member said he had been isolated in his room 2 days after he reported a pain in his throat. Everyone on the ship is scared. Many people are falling sick, and now the crew's getting sick too, he said. While he waits for test results, he has been reading all the news and communicating with friends and family. Officials in Japan say isolating people on the ship is one way to prevent the disease's spread. Other experts argue the measure could create more infection. Reiji Goto is a doctor at Daiyukai General Hospital in Ichinomiya. He told TBS Television, "More and more people are getting infected while they are trapped on the ship, which is not good for disease prevention." Tara Smith is a professor who studies infectious diseases at Kent State University's College of Public Health in the United States. She said a hospital, not a ship, is the best place to keep people quarantined. Smith added that she has concerns about new infections and the passengers' mental health.
For some, however, the fear might be worse than the virus. Many people, for example, do not show strong signs of infection with the COVID-19 virus. On Thursday, an Australian mother and daughter spoke to Australia's Nine Network Television from a Japanese hospital. The two said officials took them off the ship after a test showed that the daughter, Bianca Da Silva, was infected with the new coronavirus. She said health workers put her in a wheelchair covered with a protective material. Bianca and her mother, Suzanne, said they were both briefly sick, but feel fine now. "Honestly, it just felt like your everyday cold," Bianca said. "I had a bit of a headache before and just a slight fever, but that's about it, honestly," she added. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
Many people write to us here at VOA Learning English with this question: how can I improve my English pronunciation? Last week on our program, we talked about setting realistic goals. That means you do not have to sound exactly like a native English speaker. You can keep your accent and still communicate clearly. We also talked about learning the rhythm of English. Today, we will talk about three things you can do to sound more like a native speaker. A good place to start is to watch and listen to videos and other programs recorded in English. For example, choose a story from our website. Listen to the recording while looking at the words. Make a note of any words you think may be hard to say, and then say them aloud. Play the audio again and read along. Then record yourself reading it slowly and clearly. Listen to your recording. Are you speaking loudly enough? As an English speaker, speaking more slowly than you normally do, and speaking loudly with confidence, can make it easier for others to understand you. You can also learn how to improve your pronunciation by taking selfie videos. record a few sentences. Watch the video and ask yourself, is my voice loud enough? Did I say all of the words clearly? Next, ask an English-speaking friend to listen. Or try reading the story for a friend. Our final piece of advice is to listen to recordings from an online dictionary. Try using a dictionary app, like the Merriam-Webster Learner's Dictionary, which gives you the correct pronunciation in an audio file. Click on the small picture, it looks like a speaker, to play the sound of the word. You can also use a website, like Google Translate. Type in a word, then click on the small picture to hear the pronunciation. If you click it a second time, it will play more slowly, so you can hear each part of the word clearly. Now, you have heard our suggestions for sounding more like a native English speaker. What do you tell your friends about improving your pronunciation? Write to us and tell us your own advice. Our email is learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Hearts and Crosses. One day, a man named Bartholomew, not an important man, stopped at the Nopalito Ranch House. It was noon, and he was hungry. He sat down at the dinner table. While he was eating, he talked. "Mrs. Yeager," he said, "I saw a man on the Seco Ranch with your name, Webb Yeager. He was foreman there. He was a tall, yellow-haired man. Not a talker. Someone of your family?"
"A husband," said Santa. "That is fine for the Seco Ranch. Mr. Yeager is the best foreman in the West."
Everything at the Nopalito Ranch had been going well. For several years, they had been working at the Nopalito with a different kind of cattle. These cattle had been brought from England, and they were better than the usual Texas cattle. They had been successful at the Nopalito Ranch, and men on the other ranches were interested in them. As a result, one day a cowboy arrived at the Nopalito Ranch and gave the queen this letter.
"Mrs. Yeager, the Nopalito Ranch. I've been told by the owners of the Seco Ranch to buy 100 of your English cattle. If you can sell these to the Seco, send them to us in care of the man who brings this letter. We will then send you the money. Webb Yeager, foreman, Seco Ranch."
Business is business to a queen as it is to others. That night, the 100 cattle were moved near the ranch house, ready for an early start the next morning. When the night came and the house was quiet, did Santa Yeager cry alone? Did she hold that letter near to her heart? Did she speak the name that she had been too proud to speak for many weeks? Or did she place the letter with other business letters in her office? Ask if you will, but there is no answer. What a queen does is something we cannot always know. But this you shall be told. In the middle of the night, Santa went quietly out of the ranch house. She was dressed in something dark. She stopped for a moment under a tree. There was moonlight, and a bird was singing. There was a smell of flowers. Santa turned her face toward the southeast and threw three kisses in that direction. But there was no one to see her. Then she hurried quietly to a small building. What she did there, we can only guess. But there was the red light of a fire and noise as if Cupid might be making his arrows. Later, she came out with some strange iron tool in one hand. In the other hand, she carried something that held a small fire. She hurried in the moonlight to the place where the English cattle had been gathered. Most of the English cattle were a dark red, but among those 100, there was one as white as milk. And now Santa caught that white animal as cowboys catch cattle. And she tried once and failed. Then she tried again, and the animal fell heavily. Santa ran to it, but the animal jumped up. Again she tried, and this time she was successful. The animal fell to earth again. Before it could rise, Santa had tied its feet together. Then she ran to the fire she had carried here. From it, she took that strange iron tool. It was white hot. There was a loud cry from the animal as the white hot iron burned its skin. But no one seemed to hear. All the ranch were quiet. And in the deep night quiet, Santa ran back to the ranch house and there fell onto a bed. She let the tears from her eyes, as if queens had hearts like the hearts of ranchmen's wives, and as if a queen's husband might become a king, if he would ride back again. In the morning, the young man who had brought the letter started toward the Saco Ranch. He had cowboys with him to help him with the English cattle. It was 90 miles, 6 days' journey. The animals arrived at Saco Ranch one evening as the daylight was ending. They were received and counted by the foreman of the ranch. The next morning at 8, a horseman came riding to the Nopalito ranch house. He got down painfully from the horse and walked to the house. His horse took a great breath and let his head hang and closed his eyes. Bud did not feel sorry for Belshazzar, the horse. Today, he lives happily at Nopalito, where he is given the best care and the best food. No other horse there has ever carried a man for such a ride. The horseman entered the house. Two arms fell around his neck, and someone cried out in the voice of a woman and queen together,
"Webb! Oh, Webb!"
"I was wrong," said Webb Yeager. "I was a..." And he named a small animal with a bad smell, an animal no one likes.
"Quiet," said Santa. "Did you see it?"
"I saw it," said Webb. What were they speaking of? Perhaps you can guess if you have read the story carefully.
"Be the cattle queen," said Webb. "Forget what I did if you can. I was wrong as..."
"Quiet,"
said Santa again, putting her fingers upon his mouth.
"There's no queen here. Do you know who I am? I am Santa Yeager, first lady of the bedroom." "Come here."
She led him into a room. There stood a low baby's bed. And in the bed was a baby. A beautiful laughing baby, talking in words that no one could understand.
"There's no queen on this ranch," said Santa again. "Look at the king. He has eyes like yours, Webb. Get down on your knees and look at the king."
There was a sound of steps outside, and Bud Turner was there at the door. He was asking the same question he had asked almost a year ago. "Good morning. Shall I drive those cattle to Barber's, or..." He saw Webb and stopped with his mouth open.
"Bop, bop, 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 bop,"
cried the king, waving his arms.
"You hear what he says, Bud," said Webb Yeager. "We do what the king commands."
And that is all, except for one thing. When old man Quinn, owner of the Saco Ranch, went to look at his new English cattle, he asked his new foreman,
"What's the Nopalito Ranch's mark?"
"X over Y," said Wilson.
"I thought so," said Quinn. "But look at that white animal there. She has another mark, a heart with a cross inside. Whose mark is that?"
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
This is...